What would happen if you mixed a natural disaster film with a monster on a scale larger than perhaps any other monster in monster movie history? You get a very odd entry in an ongoing Sci-Fi Channel original series. This is Kaiju vs. History, Behemoth.
Kaiju vs. History. This is your made-for-TV actor you will never see on the big screen, Miles. And joining me is a half-volcano, half-kaiju, Patrick. Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm ready to erupt on this movie.
That's too much information.
When was the first time of the 500 viewings that you watched 2011's Behemoth, Miles? I'm sure you've seen this movie several times before the podcast, right? Behemoth.
I have seen films from Sci-Fi's Maneater series.
Yes. Believe it or not, this is the 22nd in the very Asylum-esque film series, but still somehow much better.
Yeah.
Asylum. It's RHI Entertainment, and that went by a whole host of other names: Halcyon Studios, Sonar Entertainment. But yeah, they hit upon making films, the Maneater series, that were, I think, almost all of them direct to video or direct to demand kind of films, direct to DVD.
Oh yeah,
for some of them, but a lot of them did find their way to the Sci-Fi Channel. And I don't know, did I watch
especially the sequel to Lavalantula? Which, are we getting that one? Are we watching that one, Lavalantula?
No.
So we're not going to get to watch Two Lava, Two Lantula, the actual title of the sequel?
That is
starring Steve Guttenberg.
Is that Asylum?
No, it's the same company, same production company that made...
Oh, it's not part of the Maneater series, though, is it?
No, that's the weird thing.
Very weird.
And it ties into Sharknado, even though because of the theme, but it's not made by Asylum.
That's very weird. Yeah, maybe we'll do a special where we talk about the just giant monster trend at some point. Lavalantula is a pretty cool name, but
it's a really good name, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, this all stems from the success of Sharknado, but like, mm-hmm. I love that. Actually, this production company made a handful of fun B horror films, like 976 Evil.
Well, that's the cool thing. If you go through the Maneater series, they don't really repeat themselves.
Oh, this is separate from the Maneater series. This is just that production company.
Right. But like, even then, it's like, it feels like Asylum, they're just like trying to do the hits, do whatever is popular that year.
Right. The Mockbusters, where it's like,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, and the cool thing about
Sharknado, and they just make five of them because it's slightly, you know, popular and hits the zeitgeist just right.
The cool thing about Sci-Fi Channel's movies is, I mean, because it's not just, they don't have just the Maneater series, but it feels like, you know, they are putting something out like almost like every other month. And it's like, you know, just to give you some subject matter, like, you know, giant squid, army ants, wasps, werewolves, yeti, wyvern, sea monster, the Jersey Devil. Like, it's all over the place. And it's almost like having like some like weird EC comic on your screen every month, you know?
Yeah.
But not good.
But yeah, we're talking about specifically Behemoth, and only Behemoth from this production company. Can I tell you about this movie's title, Miles?
Yes. Please tell me what's in the title.
The Monster of the Abyss in the DVD title from France. What else? Primordial Creature is a Greece title. Lots of weird things, because I don't know, maybe Behemoth, you know, that's like a biblical name. Doesn't translate super well, but The Mountain Creature in Portugal, and the UK title, I think, is the best, which is Volcanosaur. Volcanosaur, like volcano dinosaur, also the title they used in Venezuela for this film. Behemoth is a little lackluster. I think they tie it in, and you know, the conspiracy theorist character talks about these biblical cyclical creatures that come up and rise up and destroy the earth every once in a while, but just name the movie something more interesting, you know. Behemoth is almost as bad as Monster from the Asylum.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, my mouth, what's this movie about?
Not a lot, to be honest.
it's about working and hiking in, I'm guessing, I think I wrote it down somewhere. Oh yes, Squamish, British Columbia, where, you know, Vancouver, Canada, we get, you know, a lot of the CW shows, the show Arrow. That's where they filmed the Twilight films. Very, very scenic, very beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Backdrop for the film. It just feels so generic because so much Canadian TV is filmed there.
Well, it's not just that. The movie itself is super generic. I can't criticize the outdoors for being the outdoors. I can criticize the filmmakers for not doing anything with the outdoors. This movie starts Ed Quinn as Thomas Walsh. And while most of this movie, like, you kind of, he has that vibe of like, oh, it is a generic, you know, handsome white man, but like your mall catalogs version of a handsome white man. That said, he's done a lot of stuff. Like, this guy is like an actual like TV actor. Like, he's a main, he's a main cast member of Eureka. He is currently
where I know him from. Yeah.
He plays
Nathan Stark. And he's like the Iron Man, the business kind of owner of that universe, which is pretty funny. His name is Stark, but
he's in a lot of stuff.
I was about to say, I've never seen him in anything else, but I've seen almost all of Eureka. So his face is that like
forgettable.
Yeah. He has kind of like a bad guy face, which is funny that there's multiple bad guy actors that are in heroic roles in this film.
Well, and it's funny because he also appears he's in a lot of TV work. He was in the reboot of One Day at a Time, where he had a recurring role, which is really, really good sitcom. And he's currently got a main role as the president in Tyler Perry's The Oval.
Yes, which show I never heard of, but is a spinoff of Ruthless and has more episodes than the original show at this
point. Oh, no, so. Ruthless is the spinoff.
Oh, I thought Ruthless was the first one.
No. Ruthless came out in 2020, and this show premiered in 2019. But yeah, this actor does a lot, and I honestly was kind of surprised to find that out.
Well, no, he's actually great here. I feel like all the cast is actually just like one step above the Asylum's actors.
There is certainly a competence to most of the cast. I think the guy who plays the kind of shady government agent person is terrible, is the sheriff.
Yes. Sheriff Ollington is played by
also
another one of those.
I gotta say this. Uh-huh. It felt really weird to watch the cigarette smoking man being that goofy.
That's what I'm saying. There's so many evil or bad actors. So the guy that plays the sheriff, I know from, he played like a Russian on Stargate SG-1, which was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And supposedly Gary Chalk is the actor's name. He is in 2014's Godzilla. I think he plays like a general, which he plays in a lot of movies. He kind of has like an authoritative
Has so many. I mean, like, Jared Keeso is in Godzilla. Like,
yeah, it's a blink and you miss it scene. But Gary Chalk is in Godzilla. So we got some kaiju connections.
Miles. Yeah, I mean, I think the sister is not great. She's a Cindy Busby, who plays Grace. She's a regular on Hallmark movies, and yeah, I can tell.
Yeah, she was kind of the only of the main cast that didn't actually kind of surprise me. Pascal Hutton plays Emily Allington, the love interest for our main actor in this movie. And I actually like both of the leads. The thing is, they don't give them a lot to work with in this movie, but I don't know where else she's from. But yeah, but back to
she's done a lot of TV, mostly one episode appearances. Yeah. And then like she had like, you know, walk on roles on stuff like 2005's Fantastic Four. She's nightclub girlfriend, but yeah, she's not done a ton, but she has in terms of film, but she's done a lot of TV work. And
she's lead actress in this movie. And I think she's good. Yeah, you know, for like the scientist, concerned scientist for a natural disaster or monster movie, she does a very good job. It seems like she kind of studied those kind of no nonsense women characters. And
yeah, and she's
got a pastiche.
She's got a regular role on a kind of a Hallmark Western soap called When Calls the Heart that's been running for 12 seasons. And so, I mean, she ain't hurting either. I mean, again, the only person that I thought was kind of, you know, the two characters that were kind of slowing everyone down was the sister and her fiance.
Right, right.
Well, her boyfriend, she never says whether or not she's going to marry him.
Yeah, they get interrupted by a giant eyeball. Yeah, William Walsh, played by William Davis, is, you know, I will forever know as cigarette smoking man, but he plays such a lovable,
I'll always know him as that
lovable old man father in this. And it's so funny because, yeah, he really is typecast as a bad guy in so many things after cigarette smoking man. But
you know what's so funny is like he's a lecturer on skepticism.
Oh, that is very funny.
He headlines like,
I mean, I would go to listen to him for sure.
Committee of Skeptical Inquiry cons and stuff. I would 100% listen to that man talk.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels like this movie is maybe a little beneath him, but he puts in a very good performance. And, you know, I do forget about him so often playing the bad guy because he's such a lovable, you know, help out at the, do like a shift at the local diner or what have you in the town kind of character. But so yeah, the cast is really good. Just the plot, the story, the action, I don't know. It's not doing it for me. Like I said, this movie really did remind me a lot of Dante's Peak, I feel like. Maybe kind of a gender swapped, because I feel like
it does have that vibe. And
yeah.
If you're listening to us kind of like just talk about the cast and like, why aren't they talking about the movie? There's not much movie to talk about. It's not a lot of, hey, there's some earthquakes and I don't know what's going on. Do you know what's going on? Well, I have a theory. Well, that's crazy. And it's all of that for like, and then like, hey, the Aztecs did something, which that aspect of it reminded me of Cue the Winged Serpent so much.
Yeah, they just got to throw in some mythology and... And I mean, there's some interesting stuff, but for the most part, it's like we're going up on the mountain. There's some bad CGI every once in a while. And then at the very end, we do finally get a monster reveal and maybe the lamest monster death in movie history.
Yeah.
For a giant creature that's as large as a mountain, like it really is, like the mountain is like formed on top of this behemoth creature, and the CGI for it is not great, but it's not, once again, it's just one step above Asylum films, you know. It's like that's all they did is put in a little extra effort not to be the worst kaiju film. But I do like the design for the creature, like if you look at the box art, it looks pretty cool. But once again, we get like less than 10 minutes of it in an hour and a half film.
Yeah.
So I could have done a little bit more than that. Keep talking. Everything in my notes is like, this is slightly better than an Asylum movie. But yeah, it's a lot better than I would say the closest in both monster and kind of content, which is Monster, the film Monster, which famously is one of our least favorite kaiju movies of all time. We rated only 4 years before 2008's Monster 8, 2 out of 10. But yeah, this movie was a lot easier to watch. And maybe that's because I'm just so annulled to watching bad movies on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Well, that there is that aspect. You know, it's so funny because when I didn't really look into the movie as much when I first started watching it. And the entire time I'm watching, I'm like, this feels like a sci-fi show. But there is an aspect separate from the Asylum, because I know Asylum's put a bunch of stuff on the Sci-Fi Channel, that there is a, I got nothing else to do, it's Saturday afternoon, and this movie is on, kind of vibe. And so it's like good enough to, like, I'm going to keep watching. Like, I'm not going to change the channel because, you know, no one's playing today and nothing else is on. And, you know, all these boxes have to be ticked. But at the same time, you're like, I'm not having the worst time ever. But this is also what I'm watching is not good.
I left the TV remote out of arm's reach, so I guess I'm just watching
this. Right. Like, I have a beer in my hand. I've got some chips or something. I'm not going to move.
Yeah. I will say it is glacially slow.
It is very slow.
The beginning of the movie did kind of pique my interest a little bit. And then, of course, the last 10 minutes or so were pretty interesting. But yeah, in the middle there, there's just a lot of walking up the mountain and people disappearing or getting exploded, like parts of the mountain explode. And it feels like I said, very much a disaster movie, but not a kaiju movie, kaiju threat. Do you have a favorite part of the movie? Because mine is definitely the sister and the wanting to be a fiance, you know, the mountainside kind of crumbling away, and you get to see this giant eye inside there. I'm like, whoa, what is that?
Yeah, my favorite part of the movie is
when they rolled credits.
Well, there's that. No, it's I don't think it's supposed to be, well, it's not supposed to be funny, but I found it funny when Zoe the waitress and the cigarette smoking man keep falling back into the diner. The diner has like gone to this sinkhole, and they find a hatch that allows them to climb on top of it, but she's a waify, like 110-pound girl, and he's a frail old man. And so, like, they're both talking about who's going to lift the other person up. And I'm like, neither of you. Yeah. And so, like, he climbs up to help her. Then he falls, and the ladder falls on top of him. And I'm like, I'm dying laughing. It's not supposed to be funny. You're supposed to be like, oh, no. And then she falls. And, like, it's this, like, who's on first of how uncoordinated am I? And it's very, very funny in, like, the least tense scene, because, like, CO2 is leaking into the place, I guess, and there is enough ventilation, I guess. Nothing in this movie makes sense.
We didn't even mention her, but that is Jessica Parker Kennedy, which is quite a name. Canadian actress who did show up in The Flash, the TV series. She was Nora West Allen for
seasons. I really liked her in The Flash.
Yep. Once again, we're just going to keep complimenting the actors who would go on to or came from better things than Behemoth.
Yeah. She's also in the recent Percy Jackson show. But yeah, I loved her as Nora in The Flash. I thought she was great. Certainly way better than she was in Behemoth, but, you know, sometimes
that happens. Well,
what really happened to her is she got cast as a main cast member in the CW show The Secret Circle. And the CW loves using actors, especially actors that do pretty well, even if the show doesn't. And so almost every actor in the Arrowverse came from some or like the Arrowverse or, you know, the Vampire Diaries universe movies. Or shows, all of them were in some failed version of a prior show. The Secret Circle has birthed a lot of CW actors. And I mean, this is something that's been going on since the WB, because, I mean, you know, Dean from the Gilmore Girls became Sam Winchester, and Jason from Smallville became Dean Winchester. Like they constantly, you know, recycle actors. So it is kind of fun to see her humble beginnings, because she has nothing to do in this movie.
Not a lot. She's just, you know, there's some fun townsfolk they meet along the way, and she's kind of, you know, friends with the grandfatherly character. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot to love in this movie, but it's so hard. We do have to get to rating it, because there's not a lot to hate either. You know, it's just so kind of competent and proficient in coming off of watching so many Asylum films. It's like, this is really a breath of fresh air as far as bad movies go. I'm giving it a 6 out of 10 for my personal enjoyment. Miles, I can actually probably, like you said, watch this movie again, even though I don't want to, but it's a lot better than what I thought it was going to be, because when I read Sci-Fi Original and I scanned through it, I was like, oh, this doesn't look great. It did leave a very bland taste in my mouth, but like I said, so many of the elements seem like they should be interesting, and they should. I have no answers for like how to make this a better movie with like what they had access to, but
do anything.
Well, the thing is, it felt like an excellent episode of television. It felt like, you know, maybe now it's because I've watched so much Eureka. Like, if this was an episode of Eureka, it would be one of the best episodes, but it just doesn't make for a great movie. So yeah, give it a 6 out of 10. What about you?
I'm not too far away from you, but at the same time, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I gave this a 5 out of 10. I think it's baseline fine. Like, I gave you all the credentials I would need to keep watching this movie. I need to be a lazy day. The remote needs to be across the room, and I need to have a beer in my hand and maybe something to snack on, and I can, you know, stomach this movie. Because there's nothing to really hate in terms of, like, there's nothing egregiously awful except for the monster itself and the way in which they dispose of the monster. They shoot it with a rocket launcher, essentially.
They literally just shoot one, like, javelin missile down, like, its throat.
It is the end of a Resident Evil game. They just get shoved a rocket launcher that one hit kills the thing, and that's it.
There's, like, a line earlier in the film about how in ancient times they, like, fired a, like, threw a javelin down the monster's throat, and it's like, okay. Well, why did it have to do that? It's, like, so boring by comparison.
Yeah. So yeah, it's 5 out of 10. It's, I mean, again, you can have worse times. You can have much better times. This is not a movie I'm going to recommend or seek out to see again.
What about the technical aspect, Miles? Where do you rate this as far as acting, directing, writing?
So I'm same 5. I think the acting is passable. I think the script is dreadfully boring. I think with a better script, even with everything else, they could have had a pretty solid time, you know. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the movie suffers the most, because everyone's like, "Oh, it's the CG monster." I'm like, "No, you can make a monster work for anything, but if you don't have a good script,
the monster was fine. Like, the end of the movie, the monster was great.
Yeah, I mean, oh, great, strong, but it's certainly solid.
Once again, great for a TV movie. It's
no, I'm not even giving it that. I've seen plenty of TV movies with awesome monsters.
Okay.
And some of them on the CW.
But 5 out of 10, I'm the same score for the technical aspect. A lot of relatable characters, good actors, kind of understand the elements of the movie that they were doing. Yeah, the dialogue felt very real. The characters felt lived in this universe. But the plot is so hard to follow. It's just so boring, so dry in parts, and very, very paint by numbers as far as the kind of disaster movie that this is aping. So it's hard to find fault, though, with the director or the writer. It's just there's some aspect of it that, like I said, I think would work very well for a television audience, but none of the elements when they put everything together would make me want to watch this film again. So yeah, for its technical aspect, 5 out of 10. For its importance, you know, Wikipedia is doing a lot of heavy lifting calling this a kaiju movie, and I think that's where I found out about this. And it's the only one from this Maneater series by RHI Entertainment that is really on this scale. A lot of them are just like big monsters, your Yetis and, you know, man-eating sharks and those kind of things. But I was interested to get this on our list because of what it looked like, which is a disaster movie crossed with, you know, what if the disaster was happening because there was a giant kaiju kind of thrown in. So I definitely struggle to call this a kaiju flick. It's definitely more disaster movie, But yeah, it is still like one of the largest kaijus kind of represented in almost any film. So I'm happy we talked about this at the very least. It is definitely not a typical kaiju movie, but yeah, such a lame way to kill the monster at the end. You know, super easy, barely an inconvenience to kill a kaiju the size of a mountain. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 10 for, you know, no, scratch that. I'm giving it a 4 out of 10, Miles. I don't even care anymore. I'm dropping it down. What about you for its importance?
That's exactly where I was. 4 out of 10. I don't, it asks, what is the most boring way to utilize a kaiju trope of the something? It's like, what if we took parts of Rodan and made it as mundane as possible?
Yeah, the monster kind of reminded me a little bit.
Well, I'm not talking about the monster design. It's just the idea of everything being around
the same mountain
and the quakes, yeah, and all that stuff.
I don't think they were looking at any other kaiju movie.
I don't think that's the thing. I don't think they were either. This is not a movie I'm going to seek out. It's not a movie I'm going to watch again. And I think for its importance, like, yeah, this is forgotten to sci-fi time. Yeah, 4 out of 10 for sure.
And that's the thing. It's like, sometimes I really do wish a movie was worse, and we're going to talk about that with next week's movie, but it's hard. This is such, and we talked about this before we started recording during the week. This is so paint by numbers, down the middle kind of movie. It's just not good or not bad. It is a 5 out of 10 for our final score. And that is in the barely competent kind of range, I think, for our film scores. I feel like we haven't had that score in a while. I feel like fives are kind of rare. It looks like the last one. Wow. Yeah. The last one we gave was Kong, King of Atlantis. And before that, Crawl, the Sea Monster. So
that's a pretty rare
score, I guess, as far as kaiju movies go. Right. So that's going to do it. 5 out of 10 for Behemoth. Where can folks find us, Miles, if they want to talk kaiju with us, talk all things giant monster movie?
If you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at kaijuversushistory.com. You can tweet to us at kaijuversushistory. You can visit our website, kaijuversushistory.com, and you can check out our letterbox, Kaiju vs. History. Look at our list of movies, rate, review, comment on everything there. And please check out the Cosmic Crit Discord. We have a Kaiju vs. History channel. You can talk to us in real time, often when we're bored at work. And we mostly talk about the new toys that are coming out because, you know, kaiju news is, you know, a little slower sometimes, but there's a lot of cool stuff coming out. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Sorry, I keep going through our past reviews of other movies with five. Hugh the Winged Serpent, we mentioned in this episode, we gave a 5 out of 10 as well.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, that is going to do it. Thank you, Miles. Thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you on the next week's episode when indeed we go one rung down the quality ladder to check out the second entry in an Asylum series that continues with its kaiju-esque monster versus style film. Will this direct-to-DVD film beat the original, or is this one just another crock of kaiju crap? Find out along with us as we examine the history versus Megashark versus Crocosaurus.